Here we go.
It's not about converting anyone. It's just about presenting spiritual tools and giving you the opportunity to see if they can help reduce the amount of suffering in your life. But there's no need to become a Buddhist. Please don't. Please stay whatever you are. Okay. Most people have a relationship with their own suffering, their own stress, that can be summarized with one word, which is avoidance. We like to avoid the fact that we are stressed out and suffering as long as possible. We don't like to open the bills. We don't like to look at what's going on inside of us when we feel lonely, sad, angry, despairing. We generally have strategies to stop feeling that way and not look at it at all. We like to, some of us like to drink or take drugs or take pills or to focus on the things in the outside world that arose at the same time with our stress. For example, we feel financially insecure, and so we just think, oh, if only I had a job that was reliable and paid me a lot of money, everything would be fine in my life. And so rather than look at the stress and the suffering and the financial insecurity and the worrying mind, we just like to focus on, okay, let me just get this job that will get rid of that. Of course, the problem is, over and over and over again, we deal with the external problem that we think is causing all of our suffering, and still, we wind up suffering even after we solve that external problem. To wit, we think, oh, if only I was in a relationship, I would never feel lonely or disconnected or isolated. So then we get in a relationship, and then a few months later or years later, we still feel lonely, disconnected, isolated. Or we get a job and we think that will solve our financial problems, and then suddenly we need more stuff and it no longer solves our financial problems or our insecurity. But we forget this fact and we keep on moving from one external thing to another external thing that we think will solve the feelings that we have in here. Some of us develop then what I call either the turtle or the porcupine approach to life, which is when we start feeling upset and discomforted, we shrink into our shells in the hope that it will all blow by. And even though everything in life isn't permanent, that kind of approach really doesn't work because we're still not looking at the stress and the suffering that we feel. Some of us are like porcupines where something happens and we send out our needles. I'm never going to be in a relationship again. Look at what happens to me when I am. Or I'm never going to trust anybody again. I'm never going to talk about what's going on inside of me because look how they go and treat me after I become open. Another approach we have that really doesn't work is what I call, and forgive this awkward analogy, but hey, this is a spiritual place. You hear nothing but awkward analogies in spiritual places. We try to turn dogs into cats. If you met somebody who was sitting there squeezing their eyes and tensing all their muscles, and you said, hey, what's the matter? And they said, well, I got myself a dog and I really wish I had got a cat instead, and I'm trying to turn it into a cat. You think, my God, you've lost your fucking mind. You're trying through willpower to turn your fucking dog into a cat. But in life, we wind up with people who are like dogs and we wish they were cats. We have people who are needy independence and endlessly following us around and squeeze what little space we have away from us. And we wish they were like cats, aloof, distant, uncaring. And then when we get a cat, when we get a cat person in our lives, we wish they were a dog. Oh, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, she doesn't call me back enough, doesn't care enough about me. Why isn't this person a dog? So we waste an enormous amount of time trying to change dogs into cats and cats into dogs. And guess what? People just don't change because you want them to. This doesn't happen. So the Buddha said we make this primary mistake, which is that we assume that our suffering arises because of what's going on in our life around us. And the Buddha was no stranger to the human mind. He studied it. He did nothing else but study it for 6 years. And he studied with many meditation teachers and people who were very aware of how the human mind worked, and just also then went off on his own. And much like Freud, just did an in-depth self-analysis of the way his own mind worked. And he came up with some pretty fascinating conclusions. The first of which is that the human mind is set up to suffer. From the moment you're born, you are given all the necessary tools you need to suffer with your human mind. The mind has two basic tracks to it. The first is the very slow track that presents the world to us. The second is a very fast track, which we're largely unaware of, but those of you who have ever studied neurobiology know is the limbic track. And basically, the amygdala and the hypothalamus look at everything before we're consciously aware and decide if the things we're experiencing out there are good or bad. And generally, most of the associations it makes are pretty dumb. They are dumb. It's just a matter of fact that it's set up to help us survive at all costs, but really it makes a lot of really stupid associations. For example, just to name one, if you're in a car crash and the car crash happens on 33rd Street, and you're listening to the Pogues at the time, every time you're on 33rd Street or a Pogues song comes on in the rest of your life, your body will get tense. Because it's associated all sorts of things that had nothing to do with the accident with drama and badness and danger. Now, the amygdala is doing that every moment we're alive. It's associating things that have nothing to do with danger and just deciding willy-nilly, well, this is a bad idea. If, for example, you were a child and whenever your dad got angry and started yelling, he made a face. Then whenever you see somebody in the rest of your life making that same face, you will get tense. You will get defensive. Your body will get tight and you will be ready for a fight. So you can see that before you've even become aware or have in any way, shape, or form processed what this person is doing, already your body and unconscious, your gut feelings have decided that you're in danger, that something bad has happened. Then on top of that, we have all sorts of implicit associations. I don't know if you've ever read that book by Malcolm Gladwell, Blink, but we all have implicit associations and perceptions that we add onto our experience. A good, simple example of this would be racial profiling. When a white policeman sees two black youths in a car or Lexus, he more often than likely when they study and they do clinical studies, sees something completely different than when he sees two white youths in a Lexus. And when they do, in fact, studies of how much we have racial profiling and ingrained biases in us, they find out that it's actually prevalent across all sections of society. No one is free from these internal biases. And they go beyond things like racial profiling, they just go to all the things in our day-to-day life. Some of us like people with blonde hair more than brunettes, or people who are tall over people who are short. You get the idea. There's all these ingrained biases that we have. And then on top of that, we're constantly living in our own stories of our own lives. If you're very busy and you're late for work and somebody's standing in front of the subway door, they can be perceived as if they're a mortal enemy threatening your very livelihood. On the other hand, if you're extremely lonely and you're telling yourself that you have nobody in your life and you're unconnected and the only thing you need is to find a partner, then you go to a bar and you might meet somebody who's totally and completely inappropriate for you. From every possible perspective, this is the wrong person. And yet your brain will tell you that this is the most attractive person you've ever seen in your entire life. So, distortions. The brain is set up not to present reality accurately or objectively. The mind is set up to distort the world so that we will survive at all costs and fuck and reproduce. And probably get a couple of good meals in there as well. But that's about it. It could care less if you are happy. The brain's neurochemicals are not set up for you to be lastingly happy. They are set up for you to survive. That's the way it works. Don't blame me. Don't blame Darwin. So, or don't blame Darwin. He just discovered that it's the way it works. It's actually the way just things are. And if you happen to believe in, what's that other thing? Intelligent design. Good luck. So anyway, the Buddha was looking for, noticing this, the mind is set up to distort and to create suffering. The Buddha was after insights into what causes our suffering, and it was after an approach to life that would give us lasting happiness. He was into finding a solution that would, A, not be dependent upon what's going on in the world around you, because the things that are going on in the world around you are not that controllable by you. No matter how much you try to control people and make them be always there and always say the things you want them to say and always do the things you want them to do, guess what? They won't. So if that's your solution for happiness, good luck. The goal was to find, therefore, a solution that was lasting and came from within. And hence the Four Noble Truths. The first of which is that in life, the way most people, or the way we are born to live life, the way we are trained to live life, the way the mind is set up, creates a lot of suffering. The Buddha said it's sorrow, lamentation, grief. There's, of course, the inevitable sufferings like birth, sickness, aging, and death. Then there's the ones we add on to it, the lamentations, the sorrow, the not getting what we want, the getting what we don't want, all those things that create enormous amount of suffering. Another metaphor the Buddha used is that basically life shoots a single arrow into us. We get bad news at work, we get bad news in a relationship, our parents call us up, something's wrong, somebody looks at us funny. The world shoots one arrow into us. And if that was all it is, we'd be able to live very happily. But what we do then, oddly enough, is then continue to shoot arrow after arrow after arrow into ourselves in the form of, oh, why is this happening to me? Why am I the one who gets sick? Why am I the one who's alone? Why am I the one with financial insecurity? Why am I the one going through this? And we totally forget that, in fact, everything we experience is happening to millions and millions and millions of other people, because that's just the way life is. In life, there is financial insecurity at times. In life, there is feelings of loneliness and anger and feelings of despair. These are what happens. But then we take these events from the outside world, especially the news we don't like, And we've already got these arrows waiting to shoot into ourselves. The brain is distorting every bit of information to make it seem worse. And then we're telling these autobiographical stories about how it's just happening to me. And how I'm the one that this is happening to. It's not just what life is. But I'm the one who's growing old. I'm the one who got sick. I'm the one who's lost a friend or lost a parent. I'm the one. And then we try to do something that even makes it worse, which is we try to figure out how we can avoid these inevitable things from the outside from happening again. And that avoidance means, like, for example, if we perform in public and it doesn't go so well, then we decide from now on I'm never going to speak in front of people again. And so we avoid having to speak in public. And then what happens is we think, well, that's all right, but what we don't realize is that that avoidance is creeping into other things in our life. Pretty soon we start over-monitoring what people are thinking about us. We start trying to control how people view us. We start worrying about going even out to any public event. These kind of avoidance strategies grow and grow and grow. So the Buddha wanted us first, he said, in the First Noble Truth, is simply to understand what suffering is. To look inside and to see what suffering is comprised of. Start breaking it down. Instead of experiencing the fact, oh my God, I'm so upset, and just leaving it as I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm hurt by the people at my job, I'm hurt with my boyfriend, I'm hurt by my mother, I'm hurt by my best friend, I'm pissed off at Bush, whatever. Look inside first. Take it apart. See what is our anger. How does our anger sit within us? How does our suffering live within us? What parts of our body, when we get angry, get all tight and tense? How do we even know that we're angry? Most of the time it's just this phrase that we use, but we never look into ourselves and begin to understand that the Buddha said it's comprised of different components that we all put together and we say is, for example, anger. What we'll find is that it's comprised of just an overall body feeling of being tense. Then there'll be a specific part in our body that gets really tight when we're angry. Maybe it'll be our stomach or our chest or our shoulders or our jaw or our throat. Get to know what part of your body corresponds to each emotional state that you're in. This is very important because if you want to, A, simply know what's going on, know that you're in fact in a stress state, you got to start by being able to know this is what's going on. Most people think they're aware whenever they're angry or they're upset, but most of the time we're not even aware of that simple basic information. And then we say something that we have no control over and we have to live with the consequences. So simply knowing, oh my God, my stomach is really tight right now. Just that little bit of information will give you so much insight into what's going on. Some people just monitor their shoulders. See if the shoulders start creeping up towards the ears. See just if the body is relaxed. If you're breathing normally, or if your breath is faster or more tight. And then look at just the overall gut feelings. Do you feel relaxed right now, or do you feel this sense of, I've just got to get through this moment? As soon as I get through this moment, I'll be okay. When we have that feeling of there's something wrong with the present moment, that means we'll say or do just about anything to get out. We'll do things that we're not entirely responsible. We don't really have true free will if we're just trying no matter what to get past this moment in time. See what kinds of thoughts are in our heads. This kind of breaking down what state we're in gives us then the ability to step by step work on relaxing and working with our suffering, our stress, the things that are causing us strain and just a sense of life being unbearable. The Buddha said we start always with the exact opposite of what we want to start with. instead of attacking the thoughts, and generally when we're upset, we always go into the thoughts. If we need a new job because we're low on funds, we immediately start figuring out, oh my God, how can I address this situation? If we're upset with our work, we figure out how can we deal with that? How can we change our job, or can we quit and get another job? If we're upset with a friend, we think about what we should say to that friend to put them in their place, or our parents. So we're going always to the external world and the world of thoughts. And the Buddha said, no, start first with the body. Always relax the body. Always find what's tense and tight there. Always learn to breathe and use your breath as a way to work. And that's why we meditate, because it's so hard to do this when we are in the middle of a stressed out situation, when we're freaked out, when we're angry. That's the hardest time to start working with the breath and the body and the gut feelings, when we're in the midst of anger. So we start in meditation learning to bring the mind back again and again and again to make the body comfortable, to give ourselves practice for when we're in tough times. Once we've relaxed the body, the gut feelings, then we can start looking at the thoughts and seeing which thoughts are comforting and helpful and which thoughts are just unreliable. And I can give you kind of examples of unreliable thoughts. Unreliable thoughts are always based on guesses about the future, trying to figure out what's going to happen to us in the future, how bad it's going to be if we do this or that, trying to figure out all the ramifications of our actions. That kind of thinking is filled on too many suppositions that are unknowable. The Buddha said jumping into the future is almost invariably the most unskillful thing we can do. The only thing we have to ask ourselves when we're about to take an action is this action motivated by harmlessness? Am I simply trying to be kind? That's it. You don't have to figure out all the ramifications and how everything's going to play out. You simply ask, is this motivated by kindness? Put your action into place, and if you see it's backfiring, then stop. But the rest of the thing of trying to envision every possible outcome and how dreadful it's going to be for us, this doesn't bring clarity in life. All it brings is more stress. Another kind of thought that always brings stress is worrying what people are going to think about us. Often in life, when we're upset with our jobs or we're upset with our relationships, we think, oh my God, what is my mom going to say if I dump my boyfriend? She's going to think, there she goes again, unable to be in the relationship. And we really put somebody else's opinion of us above our own lasting happiness. Doesn't work. The only thing we have to ask ourselves is, do these actions I'm about to take fit into my moral foundation? If you have a moral foundation, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks about you, because there's a lot of times in life that people will not agree with actions that you need to take to stay happy and healthy. So making your happiness contingent upon what other people think about you is a terrible, terrible waste of time, and it's a great way to add suffering to your life. Of course, again, you need to have a moral foundation. If you're simply taking any actions and damn what anybody thinks and fuck them all, that's what we call nihilism. That's not strategic. So the idea is to develop a moral compass, for which the Buddha said, make sure that we believe these actions we're taking are harmless and are based in compassion and appreciation, and not from just wanting to hurt or be completely inconsiderate of other people. And then finally, another kind of thought is just the endless autobiography that we tell about ourselves. Oh, I'm always the one who's lonely. I'm always the one without money. I'm always the one without resources. I'm always the one without, you know, I'm the one who people think isn't very smart. I'm the one who people thinks is just a brainiac but isn't good at whatever. We tell a story about ourselves, and we think that's helpful. In fact, all it is limiting. It doesn't give us a guidance on what to do. So this basically, though, is an overview of the first noble truth. It's how we look and see that we're suffering, letting go that it's something that's always caused by the outside world, remembering that the Buddha said that the mind is the author of all things, that before we experience anything, it's already been chewed to bits by the mind and presented us. It's already a stacked agenda. So we don't have to believe everything the mind tells us. We don't have to, as Flavor Flav said, believe the hype. We can simply instead, first, before we think of any actions or think if only I could change this thing about the world, we can first go into the body, relax our gut feelings, relax just with the tenseness and the tightness, the breath itself, then begin to look and see which thoughts are simply based in being kind to ourselves right now and are not based on trying to figure out the future or compare ourselves with other people or worry about what other people are thinking about us. And maybe after we do all that, we'll have a foundation for what actions to take next. Next week I'm going to talk about the second noble truth. The Buddha discovered the cause of our suffering and how we can put that into place in our day-to-day lives to make them, hopefully, better lives to live. So I hope that was of some interest, and now it's your turn to ask any questions or share about anything that's going on with you, and I thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hey.